We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
I knew something didn't feel right. I was coughing, I had some chest pains, and I just thought I had COVID. The biopsy revealed that there was a mass on my lung, fourth stage lung cancer. When I got the diagnosis, I said, no tears, just prayers. The doctors at UPMC were on a mission to make me whole again. It just feels like I've been given a second chance. I didn't choose to have lung cancer, but I did choose UPMC.
Welcome to The Spark. That was an advertisement from UPMC with our guest today, Samet George. And on Sunday, February 11th, Harrisburg author of the book, Few Are Chosen, It's an Honor to Be Selected by God, Samet George, had experienced something that most people in this world could only imagine. What was that? Well, I'm glad you asked. During Super Bowl 58, Samet had her story highlighted by UPMC during a Super Bowl commercial. However, that comes after not one, but two bouts with stage four cancer, and we're going to get into that today. And today on The Spark, we have author Samet George and her husband Curtis with us to tell us about her remarkable journey and story. So hello to you both, and thank you for joining us on The Spark today.
Hello.
So first question here, how did a routine trip to Florida turn into a life-changing health ordeal?
Wow. Well, we went to Florida, took our grandkids to Disney, had a beautiful time. And unfortunately, before we left, I started doing a lot of coughing. We actually got caught up in one of those Fort Lauderdale, all luggage is lost, all flights delayed. So we sat around the airport for a very long period of time. Mm-hmm. And when I got home, I was still coughing and I had a little chest pain. And we assumed that 2 years had gone by and I probably had dodged COVID, but maybe now it had caught up with me. So Curtis thought it was best that as soon as we got back from Florida, in fact, it was a matter of a couple hours, he took me to the ER. We just assumed I had COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the ER and basically they did a bunch of tests and I wanted to rule out a heart attack because they said I'd been sitting so long at the airport and on a tarmac that it could be a pulmonary embolism, and they wanted to make sure they ruled out any blood clots that may have collected or went to my lungs. So they did EKGs and they did x-rays and CAT scans, and they came back and said, well, we ruled out you don't have COVID, you don't have a heart attack, you don't have a pulmonary embolism, but what you do have is pneumonia. So take this prescription for a few weeks and you should be feeling better. The cough should dissipate. And unfortunately it didn't.
So then how long did this cough persist?
The cough persisted for about, they told me it would be about 3 weeks, but when I got to the fourth week and it wasn't even getting better, I called my primary care physician, Dr. Gerlach, and he told me that he had access to the records at UPMC, so he said, I'm going to pull up what happened. You told me you just had this pneumonia. I'll pull those records up, and I'll call you back. And he called back a few hours later and said, I pulled up your records, and you may have had pneumonia, but you have a small mass on your lung. He said, I'm not sure what it is. I'm not a lung doctor, but I need to get you to a specialist right away just to rule out anything more serious. So he turned around, and within a matter of a day or so, a lung surgeon, Dr. Moritz, reached out to me and told me that he had already looked at my scans as well, and there's no way of knowing what that mass was unless he did a biopsy.
Mm-hmm.
So within a matter of a couple of days, and at this point, we're meeting with the doctor via Zoom. We were still not doing in-person visits. Mm-hmm. And within a matter of days, he scheduled a biopsy and called me about 3 days later to ask me how I felt since the surgery. And I said, I feel pretty good. I said, I'm not sure what you did. You said you were going to brush my lungs and take a sample of that mask. Well, I told him, I said, whatever you did that night after surgery, I started coughing up lots of phlegm. And the next morning I woke up, my chest didn't feel tight anymore. And I'm sure whatever you did broke up what was happening, so I'm good. Mm-hmm. He said, well, I'm glad to hear that, but your biopsy came back and shows that you have third-stage lung cancer.
Wow. Wow. So can you take us to that moment once you heard that?
Well, initially when I heard it from him, he just kept talking. You have third-stage lung cancer, and it's spreading very fast. And I had to stop him and say, Dr. Moritz, are you talking to the right person? Mm. I said, I'm not feeling like I have lung cancer. I don't even smoke. Never smoke cigarettes. We don't have cancer in our family. I said, and we only met one time, person to person, which was the morning of the biopsy. I said, are you talking to the right person? And so he held up a sheet of paper right in front of the screen and said, is this you, Samet George? Is your birthday 11/24/58? Is this your picture in the corner? And I said, yes. He said, well, it's you. He said, we need to start working right away because it's spreading. And I said, spreading? He said, and you don't have much time. I said, how do you know it's spreading? What's going on? I don't understand any of this. He said, well, I looked at the biopsy, x-ray, and I compared it to what UPMC took a month ago when they told you had pneumonia. And the mass has, it's changed dramatically in size.
Wow.
It's increased. So that lets us know it's not the same size 4 weeks later. So it lets us know that it's spreading. He said, and I'm going to have my team reach out to you. You'll have to take lots of test all week because it needs to come off your lung. It has to come off. You can't live with that. He said, but it's too large to remove right now, so we need to shrink it. So I'm going to send you out all week to have MRIs and different tests to figure out whether we should shrink it with radiation or whether we should shrink it with
chemo.
So all week long, he sent me out. I went back and forth. But one thing I did do the day that I got the diagnosis, I called my husband right away. Up until that moment, Curtis had been at every doctor's visit, every surgical procedure. But when I felt so good after the biopsy, feeling like, okay, I'm feeling better, I'm breathing better, he broke this thing up, that day I told Curtis, I said, don't bother to come. I'm not even going to take off work. I said, I'm just going to take the phone call, and you know, I'm sure he's going to tell me everything is okay. So I was by myself. So as soon as I heard the diagnosis, I quickly called my husband and said, you know,
she made me go to the races.
Now, he had been by my side so long that I felt like he needed to get with his boys and have an afternoon to relax as well. And as soon as he heard it, I told him, I said, you're not going to believe this, but the doctor is saying I have third stage lung cancer. And at that point, I'm still in like this tunnel vision, even talking about it. It just didn't seem real. So he told me he just got to the races, just parked the car and said, I'm going to turn around. I'm a couple hours from you, but I'm coming right back right now. And so he turned right around and came back home.
Now we've seen the TV and the movie rendition of when you hear that you have cancer, like you know the dramatic music comes and like you know you kind of just blur out everything and the doctor is just womp 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 womp. Was that like that for you after hearing that word cancer, or did you stay astute and listen to what the doctor had to say?
Well, when I first heard that I had the third stage cancer, I spoke to my husband and we decided after telling our children that we would call the pastor. And pastor said right away we have to start doing some fasting and praying. He put together a fast where we did a half an hour of prayer in the morning, followed by juice in the afternoon, and then a half an hour of prayer in the evening, and was just followed by fruit. And we did that for a full week. And we did the fast from a Monday morning to a Sunday night at midnight. And during that same fast time, I was running back and forth to the doctors, getting these extra tests done to figure out how we were going to shrink this third stage cancer. And the morning when I woke up from the fast, that Monday morning, I woke up, My pillow was wet. My eyes were crusted shut. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't figure out what was going on. I tell people all the time that my bed's wet a lot of time because I have hot flashes. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't surprising.
I thought it was because of me, you know.
But I couldn't figure out why my eyes were crusted shut. And Curtis and I talked about it. And I said, you know, my eyes felt very tired. I went in the bathroom and cleaned myself up. And I just started thinking over, you know, why would my eyes be like this? And then I remembered I was crying in my sleep. Then a few minutes later, I told Curtis. He said, what were you crying about? I said, I don't know. A couple minutes go by, I brush my teeth and finish getting dressed, and I remember, wait a second, I had a dream. Then a few minutes later go by, and I realize, wait, I had a dream that God spoke to me. He talked to me in my dream. And then a few minutes led by, and probably within an hour, it was crystal clear that it was not a dream. God did not talk to me in a dream. God spoke to me in my sleep. And it was so clear that it was not a dream. I can remember the tone, the pitch, exactly what he said. He called out my name. He said, Sam, this is not about you. It's all about me.
Wow.
I need to use you to let my light shine through, to be a beacon, to draw others to my kingdom. There are too many who do not believe I'm still on the throne and still in the miracle-making business. I just need to use you. So after I heard that God spoke to me, and it took me a while before I would even tell anybody. I thought, okay, if I tell somebody God actually spoke to me, not he laid it on my heart or not he spoke to me in a dream. When I tell people it was the real deal, I know they're going to think I'm a little crazy, so I didn't tell anybody. And after about 3 hours, I decided to share it with Curtis. I said, okay, I'm going to take it to him first. And I've been pondering all day how to let him know this. And when I did tell him, he right away said, God, you're not crazy. He said, I believe every word you're saying. He said, if there's one person God has favored, it's you.
She's always been highly favored in those regards. I mean, it expresses in the book, throughout the book. The book's wonderful. But as soon as she brought it to me, I was like, I know it. I felt it. We've been together for going on 35 years. Now I'm married 33 and, you know, two. And as soon as she brought it to me, and I saw what she was going through, and it's like, okay, this is real. You know, we're here, so.
And Curtis, for you, where was your mind after receiving that phone call? Because I mean, just 5 minutes before that, like you had a completely different plan, probably ready to let your hair down. You with your boys at the track, you know, and then this hard pivot. Can you take us to that moment?
Yeah, and this is my best buddy of like 40 years. We were just graded. Get it in for today, have some good fun at the races and all. And I got this call, and she normally lets me alone on some of the nature. On the ride home, can you stop and get me some potato chips? You know, something like that. But besides that, I heard the tone, and all of a sudden my heart dropped, my throat got thick. I said, calm down, babe, what is it? You got to come home. And I was like, you know, you fall apart, then you're like, oh my God, I'm not here for my wife. I got a dart, you know, I got a nice fast sports car. I'm running red lights, man. I'm coming down 83, rocking and rolling, just trying to get to her. And it's amazing that when you're connected like that, you feel that. And I was probably like 100 miles away, but I was like, I got to go. And he was like, what's wrong? I said, I got to go. I couldn't even explain to her. I said, I just got to, because you never know, every second counts and all. But,
right.
But I knew God had her, but I know I needed to be there, you know, to comfort. And then when she let it spill it out, it was huge.
Now, where did your mind go once the beans were spilled? Because for myself, when my father outlined his cancer diagnosis and told us what was going on, I know my mind immediately went to the negative, you know. So for yourself, after receiving that message face to face, where did your mind go?
Yeah, that's funny. It did go there just briefly, but I had to say immediately to myself, you know, we've been going to the same church, her family-owned church, you know, since she was my Sunday school teacher.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's how we are. She put that little pieces in the book, too. Also, but your faith, your walk, as soon as you tell God, I need you to handle this. I need you to get me through this. I need you ever so much right now. I need you to answer it. I need you to be here right now. And he did, because I said, what kind of man, what kind of husband I'd be if I'm coming in this week, not walking out on my faith and be supported from the door, but like I stated earlier, she has always been highly favored, just mm-hmm. way on the top like that. People don't understand. I'm like, no. So I've always rode off of her with her goodness, her walk, her spirit. So I was kind of good, but I knew I had to get myself together because, you know, your mind does go every direction like you stated. Mm-hmm. Like, what if this happened? What if that? Now, this is a great happen. This, so it was a zooting thing, so I had to slow down, come back down the highway. Like, my mind was all across the board. I said, well, if I'd be across the road.
That wasn't it. There was more. So you got the phone call about the stage 3 cancer, but there was more?
Yes, there was more. During that week, we did a lot of praying and fasting. At the end of the week, we were getting ready to head out on a little weekend getaway. We had been through so much that week. I think I had at least 12, 13 appointments between getting tests and doctors, trying to figure out how to shrink this third stage mass. And when we initially thought I had pneumonia a month before, we like to travel. We decided, you know, as far as COVID goes, maybe we should calm down on flying and public transportation and hotels. And we decided to go out and get a motor coach. Mm-hmm. So we went out and got a motor coach.
Yay, she got it right. She normally calls it a motor home. It's a motor coach. Hallelujah.
So we were all packed up, ready to go away on our maiden journey, what they call the, I forgot what the maiden journey of a motor home is called. The shakedown.
Oh, yeah, the shakedown. Yeah.
We were going to go on our first trip just to kind of process what has happened. I've gotten these diagnoses. I've been through all these tests. God spoke to me. And it just was a lot where we really weren't able to really talk that week. It was just so much going on. Mm. So we were looking forward to going away for the weekend. It was actually a Labor Day weekend. And right before we pulled out the driveway, I mean, I'd been packing the motor coach for a couple days, making sure we had everything we needed, pre-cooking meals, and we were just trying to pull away when I got a call back from the doctor saying the last of your test results came back from us trying to figure out how to shrink this, and I need to let you know that it's not third stage lung cancer. It's fourth stage.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's gone to your brain already.
Oh,
and I need to let you know that it's not reversible, curable, or survivable in any way. So right then, I'm like, you know, Curtis, right before he told me, he says, Curtis with you. I said, well, he's outside. He said, call him in. So I knew when he called him, told me to call Curtis to the phone. I knew it was something. I didn't know what, but I figured if he was my husband with me. So I said, okay. So I said, so what does this mean? He said, well, you need emergency brain surgery, as in like tomorrow. Mm. I said, tomorrow? I said, we're getting ready to go away. He said, well, first of all, we don't understand how this mass is on your brain in a spot where you shouldn't even have vision right now. Wow. And here you're saying that you didn't have any vision blurred, no stumbling, no seizures, no headaches. You don't have one single symptom. He said, but everything is pointing to it, and literally you could wake up tomorrow blind, or you can get ready to go into some seizures. So it needs to come off immediately. He said, we've already reached out to the brain surgeon, and we're prepared to do surgery in the next day or two.
Wow.
So I actually said to him, I said, this is so much. I said, honestly, I got to step out on this one. I said, God already told me he's just using me. Me and my husband need this weekend so bad just to get away from everything, get away from this, to just talk this over and figure out where we're going. He said, well, it's against my judgment that you go because you're probably getting ready to start going into seizures. And I'd hate for you to be out of town. He said, but how about this? Where are you going? I said, we're going down to Virginia. He said, how about if I call in some seizure medicine and get you started right away? He said, because I'm just not comfortable with you being out of town with this. Mm. So I said, okay. I said, well, I tell you what, we can hang around Harrisburg a little longer, call it into the Giant Pharmacy, and I'll pick it up, and we'll just, you know, wait a little longer to get on the road. Mm-hmm. So we got on the road, and of course, we started with the seizure medicine. And as soon as I came back, within 3 days, I was at the brain surgeon talking to him, and I thought that he was going to at least do some type of examination or something. And when I went in, he started speaking to me, and I said, well, are you going to examine me? He said, I don't need to. He said, your doctors were really concerned. He said, they reached out to me 2 days ago. We've already sat down and met and discussed your case. I've looked at all your scans, so there's no need. He said, the only thing I don't understand is how you haven't had a headache, no blurred vision, no dizzy spells, no confusion. He said, he pulled up the x-ray and showed me the tumor on my brain and said, this is the tumor. All these little white specks going through your brain shows that this is spreading. Mm-hmm. He said, it is not reversible, curable, or survivable. They let me know that I had about 6 weeks to 6 months to live. Mm-hmm. I should start preparing. But if they did this surgery, it would get me a little closer to where I need to be.
Mm-hmm.
So he told me that I was the first person he would have ever done surgery on, brain surgery.
Wow.
That didn't have a headache, a vision blurred, a dizzy spell, stumbling, nothing, not one single symptom. He said, but the x-rays are showing that it's definitely cancer and you cannot live with a tumor on your brain. Your brain will take you out of here before your lung will. So we decided as a team that we should work on your brain first and then come back to the lung. So he said the test that your doctor showed me was ran on your lung and it just happened to pick up what was on your brain. He said, but if I'm going to be doing surgery in 2 days, I need some real brain scans. So I'm going to send you back and you're having all these tests done again, but now you're getting them done on your brain. So I said, no problem. He said, but we're going to go out and set up surgery for 2 days. Well, the night before we went in for surgery, he called me and said, I just wanted to make sure you're prepared for tomorrow. You still down for the surgery? And I said, yep, I'm all prayed up and ready to go. He said, well, the last of my test results came back. It's going to compromise your spine now. So you're going to need emergency brain surgery and emergency spine surgery. He said, I don't like to do two surgeries in 1 day, so I've already taken the liberty to reserve the operating room 6 days from now, and we are going to come back in 6 days and we're going to take care of your spine. He said, that doesn't make sense to do your brain. We need to do everything.
Mm.
And so I said, okay. He told me I would be in the hospital for about a week and then probably have to go to rehab for 2 weeks to learn how to speak again because my words would probably be slurred, and to learn how to possibly walk because my walk would be stumbling.
Well, Sam, man, I'm going to have you come back. I am going to have you come back because, I feel like we didn't even scratch the surface of your story. You have such an amazing story. It is inspiring. Thank you, Curtis. Thank you for joining us on The Spark. I'm serious. We're going to have you come back. Sorry to put you on the spot
No worries.
Yes. Definitely to have you come back.
One thing God told me to do is to open my mouth, so all you have to do is let me know when.